Welcome back, everybody, for another deep
That's
dive.
always fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so have you ever like walked into a room and you can just feel it, you know? Like someone's in trouble and everyone's kind of tiptoeing around, like trying not to make eye contact.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's like that awkward silence after someone spills their drink at a party. You can just sense the blame radiating outwards.
Yeah, exactly. It's like blame is contagious or something. But you know what's even more interesting? That's exactly what we're diving into today.
Hit me with it. What are we unpacking this time?
Well, we're tackling chapter two of Unraveling the Fabric of Fear, and the title itself, The Blame Cycle, already has me hooked. It just feels so relatable, right?
Absolutely. Like, we all instinctively know what that means. Like, we've all been there on one side of the equation or the other.
Totally. And what's cool about this chapter is it's not just like, here's why you blame people. It actually goes deeper, looking at the psychology, but also bringing in all these different spiritual and religious viewpoints on blame and
It's
forgiveness.
like a global tour of guilt trips. Sign me up.
Huh, exactly. And it picks up on some of the things we talked about last time with that whole living in the now idea.
Yeah. We are just going to be looking at chapter two today, but I do want to mention just briefly that chapter three is titled Owning Ego, the Fine Art of Forgiveness, which, as you'll see, kind of ties in with our conversation today.
So today, our mission, should you choose to accept it, is to get down to the nitty-gritty of what blame really is. And then, fingers crossed, we'll maybe figure out how to break free from this blame cycle madness. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm ready to trade in my blame thrower for something a little less, well, incendiary.
It says that from the time we're babies, we're constantly picking up on these thought patterns, like what gets rewarded, what gets punished. And that shapes our whole understanding of how the world works. And unfortunately, sometimes that leads us down the path of thinking that blame is the answer.
So we're basically little sponges soaking up all these reactions and behaviors from the people around us.
Exactly. It's a constant process of observing and learning.
Tell me more about this blame cycle thing.
Well, it starts with this idea of seeing yourself as a victim. Okay, so imagine a classic scenario. We've got Fred and Bob. Fred does something that Bob doesn't like. Maybe Fred says something mean, or maybe he forgets to do something he promised. Whatever it is, Bob feels hurt, and he starts to see himself as a victim.
Poor Bob.
Right. So Bob gets angry and he starts blaming Fred. You did this to me.
Oh boy, here we go.
Right. And now the roles have reversed. Bob, who started as the victim, has now become the persecutor. And Fred, who initially was the one doing the persecuting, is now feeling like the victim of blame.
It's like a seesaw.
Exactly. And guess what happens next? Fred, feeling attacked, might lash out and blame Bob right back. And the cycle just keeps repeating.
Round and round they go.
It's exhausting, isn't it?
It sounds like it. Now, what about that other one, the victim, persecutor, savior, blame cycle? That sounds even more complicated.
It does add another layer, but the basic principles are the same. So let's stick with Fred and Bob. Fred's doing something that Bob doesn't like, and Bob's feeling like a victim. But this time, along comes Sally.
Who's Sally?
Sally is the savior. She sees what's happening, and she feels bad for Bob. So she jumps in to defend him, and she starts condemning Fred.
So she's trying to be the hero.
Exactly. And on the surface, it might seem like she's helping. But here's the catch. By condemning Fred, Sally has now become the persecutor in Fred's eyes.
Oh, I see. So now Fred feels like he's the victim of Sally's judgment.
You got it. And now we have a three-way blame cycle. Sally might feel like she's the good guy, but she's actually perpetuating the cycle.
Wow. So even when we think we're helping, we might actually be making things worse.
It's a tough lesson. It shows us how easily we can get caught up in these dynamics without even realizing it. And then the chapter goes on to talk about this concept of victimhood as a choice. And this is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, this is where it starts to challenge our assumptions a bit. So the chapter argues that when we identify as a victim, it inherently creates this need to place blame. And it even looks at the language itself. You know, it points out that just saying a victim feels incomplete. Like you almost immediately want to ask, a victim of what?
A victim of circumstance.
Exactly. And that what almost always points to something or someone being responsible, right? Being blamed.
Right. Yeah. And the natural tendency is to direct that blame at an individual.
Right.
Right. It's much easier to point a finger at another person or even at ourselves, you know, than to step back and examine these underlying learned ideas that might be at play. Right.
We're so quick to jump to that who's at fault instead of looking at the deeper, how did we get here?
Right. And that's what the chapter calls the blame cycle. Right.
Exactly. So why do we even fall into this victim trap in the first place? Like, what's the appeal?
Well, the chapter suggests it can be a way of getting attention, or maybe love, or even help. It's like an unconscious way of signaling that we need something. But the thing is, by clinging to this victim identity, we're actually preventing ourselves from really understanding what's going on. We're so focused on who's to blame that we miss the opportunity to learn and grow.
So if I want to break free from this blame cycle, I need to stop seeing myself as a victim.
Exactly. It's about taking responsibility for your own thoughts and actions. It's not about ignoring what happened, but it is about choosing not to let it define you.
And it's everywhere, right? We see these dynamics playing out all the time in families and workplaces and broader societal conflicts. And here's where it ties back to that core concept. From the preface, remember that spectrum of love and fear.
Right.
So the chapter states that the opposite of blame, which is rooted in fear, is forgiveness, which aligns with love and curiosity. And this is huge. Forgiveness is the opposite of blame. A blame cycle can only be broken by forgiveness.
Wow. That's pretty strong wording.
Yeah.
So are they saying it's less about the other person and more about us changing our internal state?
Exactly. Okay. It's about recognizing that, you know, holding on to anger and resentment, ultimately, it hurts us more than it hurts the person we blame.
Right.
It keeps us stuck in the past. It prevents us from moving forward. And it can even impact our physical and mental health.
How do we even begin? Like, how do we cultivate this kind of forgiveness? Where do we even start?
Well, I think the first step is acknowledging the pain.
Okay.
Allowing yourself to feel the full range of emotions that come up
right.
without judgment. Mm. Then it's about shifting your perspective. Instead of viewing the person who hurt you as a villain, try to see them as a human being who's also flawed and capable of making mistakes.
Oh, that's a tough one. I think it's easier to hold on to the anger than it is to see the humanity in someone who has hurt us.
It is. It absolutely is. From there, it's about choosing to let go of the need for revenge or retribution.
Yeah.
Understanding that holding on to those desires only keeps you trapped in the cycle of pain. The chapter, it really emphasizes that forgiveness, it isn't just some magical switch we flip.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ongoing process, you know,
right.
and it takes real effort and a real shift in perspective.
Okay, so more like a marathon than a sprint.
Exactly.
Give me some like practical steps I can take to start moving in that direction towards forgiveness.
So one technique is this idea of reframing our thoughts.
Okay.
So it's about consciously choosing to focus on the lessons learned from the experience
rather
than just dwelling on the harm itself, you know?
Okay, so instead of just constantly replaying that hurt over and over again,
yeah.
in my mind, I should try to look for the lesson in it.
Exactly.
Isn't that kind of like minimizing the wrong that was done?
Not necessarily, no. Like, it's not about condoning the action, right?
Right, right.
It's about empowering yourself to move forward.
Okay.
By shifting your focus from victim to student, you're reclaiming some agency in that situation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It allows you to acknowledge the hurt without letting it totally define you.
That's an interesting way to look at it, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not about, like, erasing the past. It's more about changing how I relate to it.
Exactly.
Okay. That makes sense.
And alongside reframing, the chapter really stresses this importance of cultivating gratitude.
Okay.
You know, when we're caught in that blame cycle, it's really easy to just fixate on what we've lost or what was taken from us.
Yeah.
But gratitude, it encourages us to shift our attention to like the abundance that still exists
right.
in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. No, gratitude's huge. It's so powerful.
It is.
It's like shining a light on the good things.
Yeah.
Even when things feel really dark.
Yeah, for sure.
But what about those times when the hurt is so, so deep?
Right.
You know, it's so raw
yeah.
that it feels basically impossible to even think about gratitude.
Yeah.
Like, how do we handle those really, like, really intense emotions?
That's where I think mindfulness comes in.
Okay.
It's not something that the chapter explicitly mentions.
Okay.
But I think it connects really, really beautifully with their ideas about awareness
right.
and conscious choice. So when those painful emotions, when they surface, instead of just getting swept away by them,
yeah.
we can practice observing them
okay.
with curiosity and compassion.
So rather than trying to like suppress those feelings, I should just acknowledge them.
Exactly. Okay. Without letting them control me.
Mindfulness, it creates a space between me and my emotions.
Yes.
And that allows me to respond thoughtfully instead of just reacting impulsively.
Yeah, it's like watching a storm from a safe distance. You know, you acknowledge the power of that storm.
Right.
But you don't let it pull you in.
I love that analogy. Okay, so we've got We've got reframing, we've got gratitude,
right.
We've got mindfulness.
Yeah.
These all seem like really valuable tools.
They are.
But I'm still a little curious about something.
Yep.
If we're talking about breaking free from blame, you know, does that mean that we should never hold anyone accountable for their actions?
That is where things get really nuanced. And sometimes I think true forgiveness can actually make real accountability even possible.
How so?
Well, think about it. When we're just consumed by anger and resentment, it's really hard to see things clearly, right?
Yeah.
And to approach the situation with any sort of compassion.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But when we let go of some of that negativity, it creates space for us to respond in a more constructive way.
So I might choose to hold the person accountable, or I might just focus on my own healing and growth. The point is, I'm making the decision from a place of strength, not just reacting out of anger or hurt.
Exactly. That's powerful stuff, right?
It is. It is.
And then the chapter points out that when we can step out of those blame cycles, we gain a much clearer understanding of causality. We can actually see the chain of events that led to certain behaviors without immediately jumping to judgment.
It's like trading in those blamey blinders for a wider lens.
Exactly. Right? And speaking of wider lenses, let's take a look at how these ideas of blame and forgiveness show up in different religious and spiritual traditions. It's like this blame thing is such a universal human experience that every culture has had to grapple with it. So let's start with Christianity. What wisdom does this tradition offer?
Well, Christianity places a huge emphasis on forgiveness.
Mm.
I mean, the whole story of Jesus is about sacrifice and forgiveness on a cosmic scale.
Right.
And the chapter highlights several key verses that speak to this. For example, Ephesians 4:29 encourages us to use our words to build others up rather than tearing them down with blame and criticism. And then you have Ephesians 4:32, which basically says, be kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving, just like God forgave you.
It's like a direct command from headquarters. Thou shalt forgive.
Exactly. And then there's Proverbs 10:12, which paints this beautiful image. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. It's like love is this giant fluffy blanket that just smothers blame.
Oh, I love that image. And of course, there's the golden rule from Luke 6:31. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If we actually lived by that, I think the blame game would be over before it even started.
Imagine that. A world where everyone paused before pointing fingers and asked, would I want to be treated this way?
Seriously, it would be like a blame prevention superpower. Even in 1 Corinthians 13:4, that famous love chapter, it mentions that love keeps no record of wrongs. It's like Christianity has a whole blame be gone toolkit.
Absolutely. Now, shifting gears to Islam, the emphasis on mercy and forgiveness is equally strong. Surah Al-Imran 3:134 in the Quran praises those who spend in the way of Allah during ease and hardship, and who restrain anger and who pardon the people. Restraining anger is a direct way to interrupt the blame cycle, and pardoning, of course, is forgiveness in action.
So it's not just about being forgiving, it's about actively choosing not to let anger dictate our actions.
Exactly. And there are more examples in the Quran, like in Surah Ash-Shura 42:37, where it mentions those who avoid major sins and immoralities, and when they are angry, they forgive. Forgiveness is presented as a sign of righteousness, a virtue to strive for.
It's like a spiritual muscle we need to exercise.
Exactly. And then in the same surah, 42:43, it talks about how patience and forgiveness are matters requiring determination. It acknowledges that choosing forgiveness isn't always easy. It takes effort. And the hadith, the sayings and traditions of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, further reinforce this emphasis on mercy and forgiveness. There's a well-known hadith where the Prophet consistently encouraged pardoning, even in situations where retaliation was permissible. It highlights the proactive nature of forgiveness, the willingness to let go even when you have a right to hold on. It emphasizes that forgiveness and compassion are not just individual acts. They're essential for building a just and harmonious society. It's like a social glue that holds everything together.
Okay, so we've explored Christianity and Islam, and it's incredible how similar those core messages are. Now let's venture into the realm of Buddhism. How does this ancient philosophy approach the blame game?
Well, Buddhism is all about cultivating compassion and understanding as antidotes to hatred and blame. It emphasizes inner transformation through mindfulness and meditation.
So it's less about external rules and more about cultivating that inner peace that makes blame less appealing.
Precisely. And there's a passage from the Majjhima Nikaya that encourages the abandonment of causing harm and dwelling in compassion for all beings. It's about actively choosing a mindset of care rather than one of judgment.
It's like switching from a blame lens to a compassion lens.
Exactly. And of course, we can't forget the incredibly profound wisdom of the Dhammapada. Hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love. This really gets to the heart of the futility of responding to negativity with more negativity, including blame. It's a call to break the cycle with love and understanding.
That's such a simple yet profound statement. It's like a universal truth bomb.
And finally, the Dhammapada describes a truly enlightened person as one who finds no fault with other beings and refrains from causing any harm. It's about reaching a state of such deep understanding and compassion that blame simply dissolves.
It sounds like the ultimate blame-free zone.
Now, let's turn our attention to Hinduism. How does this ancient tradition tackle the blame dilemma?
Yeah, because Hinduism has such a rich philosophical and spiritual foundation. I'm curious to see how it fits in.
Well, the Bhagavad Gita is filled with teachings that discourage blame and promote forgiveness and compassion. For instance, a true devotee is described as someone who does not hate any creature, is friendly and compassionate to all, free from ego and selfishness, even-minded in pain and pleasure and forgiving.
So forgiveness is right up there with those other core virtues.
Absolutely. And it also lists forgiveness, uprightness, nonviolence as essential aspects of wisdom. The emphasis on inner purity, detachment from negative emotions, and the understanding of a deeper unity in Hinduism all contribute to a perspective that encourages looking beyond superficial differences and letting go of the urge to blame.
It's about seeing the bigger picture, the interconnectedness of it all.
Now let's touch on some of the other spiritual perspectives that the chapter briefly mentions.
Yeah, because it seems like this blame and forgiveness thing transcends any one religion or philosophy. It's like a universal human struggle.
Absolutely. And the chapter brings in some fascinating insights from sources like The Law of One, Eckhart Tolle, and the Emerald Tablets. The Law of One, for example, states that in forgiveness lies the stoppage of the wheel of action, or what you call karma.
So forgiveness is like the ultimate karma cleanse.
It's about breaking those cycles of cause and effect that often involve blame. And another passage from the Law of One suggests that forgiveness of others is intrinsically linked to self-forgiveness. It's like we can't truly forgive others if we're holding on to blame towards ourselves.
That makes sense. It's like our capacity to forgive others is limited by our ability to forgive ourselves.
Precisely. And then it talks about the negative path being one of separation, starting with the separation of self from self. It's like blame is a symptom of this internal division and disconnection.
So the more we blame, the more fragmented we become.
And then we have Eckhart Tolle reminding us that the primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, but your thoughts about it. Blame, as a particularly toxic thought pattern, certainly fits that bill.
It's like we're creating our own misery with those blamey thoughts.
And finally, the Emerald Tablets suggest that choosing forgiveness, a positive effect, can set in motion a chain of more positive future outcomes, breaking the negative cycle of blame. There's this common thread in these perspectives about recognizing the power of our internal states and choices in overcoming blame. Blaming others is a seductive distraction from the real work of self-awareness.
Ooh, like that one.
It's so true, right? Like, it's so much easier to cast blame outward than it is to turn that lens inward and examine our own role in the situation.
And it highlights how blame can almost become like a defense mechanism, right?
Right.
A way to protect our egos and avoid taking responsibility. But true growth, true liberation, only comes when we're willing to be honest with ourselves about our part in things.
And that honesty, that self-awareness, paves the way for forgiveness, doesn't it?
It does.
Not just of others, but also of ourselves.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that we're all imperfect beings.
Right.
You know, we all make mistakes. It's about letting go of the need to be right, the need to punish.
Right.
And embracing a more compassionate understanding of ourselves and others.
Well said. Wow. This has been such a fascinating deep dive into forgiveness. And it all came from just one chapter, The Blame Cycle, in Unraveling the Fabric of Fear. If you're interested in checking out more from A Cathartic Curiosity, they've made this whole book an open project on Google Docs, and you can find it at www.catharticcuriosity.com.
It's really amazing how accessible they've made everything. Each chapter on one page, references right there for you. I think our conversation today really shows how powerful one idea, if you really explore it, can be.
Absolutely. We've uncovered so much about blame, forgiveness, and the choices we have when someone hurts us. And that's really what the deep dive is all about, giving you the knowledge to think critically and inspiring you to explore these ideas in your own life.
trading in those blame grenades for empathy fireworks.
And that sounds way more fun, right?
Totally. And I think that's a great place to leave our listeners today. Understanding the blame cycle gives you the power to choose differently. It's like having a map to navigate that blamey terrain and avoid those emotional pitfalls. And even when you stumble, because let's be real, we all do, you can always choose to get back on the path of forgiveness. It might not be easy, but it's definitely worth it.
So, dear listener, here's a little challenge for you. Think about a situation in your life right now where you feel that urge to blame, whether it's directed at yourself or someone else. Take a moment to pause and try to identify what's really fueling that blame. What's the underlying fear, frustration, or unmet need? And then just consider, what might shift if you approach that situation with curiosity and a willingness to forgive? It might feel awkward or even impossible at first, but even a small act of forgiveness can have a ripple effect.
That's a great challenge. And who knows, maybe your experiences with blame and forgiveness will inspire our next deep dive. So keep those stories coming. And until next time, stay curious, stay compassionate, and maybe leave those blame throwers at home.